कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा
Yeah, me too. And
okay.
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Gopi Janava Labha Jamuna Chira Vannanshari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha
Shrila Prabhupada ki Grantharaj Shrima Bhagavatam ki Gaur Pramanandi, all glories to the Assembled Devotees, all glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Aknananta Mirandasya Nganandana Chalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyarevacha Patitanam Pavanemyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadarha Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. O Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 10, starting with text number 28.
Sarve prayasa abhavan vimongha Krita Krita Deva Ganeshu Daityai Krishna Nukuleshu Yata Mahatsu Trudrai Prayukta Pushriti Rukshavhacha Pushriti Rukshavhacha Sarve prayasa bhavan vimokha Krita krita deva ganesh daityai Krishna nukuleshu yata mahatsu Shudrai payukta usati rukshavaksha
Word to word meaning, sarve All prayasa endeavors abhavan were vimokha futile krita performed. Krita, again performed. Devaganeshu, unto the demigods. Daityai, by the demons. Krishna Anukuleshu, who are always protected by Krishna. Yata, just as. Mahatsu, unto the Vaishnavas. Shudrai, by insignificant persons. Prayukta, used. Ushati, unfavorable. Ruksha, rough. Vacha, words. Translation of purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation, when insignificant persons, Shudrai, use rough words to cast false, angry accusations against saintly persons, their fruitless words do not disturb the great personalities. Similarly, all the efforts of the demons against the demigods who were favorably situated under the protection of Krishna were futile. Purport, there is a Bengali saying that if a vulture curses a cow to die, the curse will not be effective. That seems like a strange saying. Similarly, accusations made by demoniac persons against devotees of Krishna cannot have any effect. The demigods are devotees of Lord Krishna, and therefore the curses of the demons were futile. That's the end of the purport. So basically, there's a fight going on after Indra has received the thunderbolt weapon made from the bones of the Dichi. Now a fight is taking place. The demigods went to attack the demons who were being led by Vitrasura. And the demons, of course, naturally fought back. And the demons' efforts, we're hearing in this verse, the demons' efforts were useless. Because why were the demons' efforts useless? Because the demigods were backed by Lord Krishna, by the protection of Lord Krishna. Krishna Anukuleshu means the demigods had the backing of the Supreme Lord. So all the efforts of the demons to subdue them were useless. Just as yata, just as when angry demoniac persons speak harshly or roughly against Vaishnavas, they are unmoved by their harsh language. That's the comparison that's being given here. Any questions? Any comments? The battle continues. So this is the next verse. The Asuras, who are never devotees of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, lost their pride in fighting when they found all their endeavors futile. Leaving aside their leader, even in the very beginning of the fight, they decided to flee because all their prowess had been taken away by the enemy. So the demons were fighting and seeing that they were getting dealt with very effectively. They became afraid and began to run. Leaving their leader, Vitrasura, aside. See you later, you're on your own. this is very cowardly, of course, to see that you're being dealt with and run away from the battle. But that's what's going on with the demons here. So the next verse. Seeing his army broken and all the Asuras, even those known as great heroes, fleeing the battlefield out of intense fear, Vitrasura, who was truly a great-minded hero, smiled and spoke the following words. So seeing all the demons fleeing, even the ones that are supposed to be considered great heroes, they are also running. So Vitrasura is smiling at this. Look at all these cowards going, you know. So he smiled seeing the situation. And he was great-minded. It said Manasvi means he had a very great mind. Naturally, being the case, he's a devotee in the garb of a demon. So being great-minded, he just smiled at their cowardice and then began to speak the following words to chastise him. Next verse. According to his position and the time and circumstances, Vichusura, the hero among heroes, spoke words that were very much to be appreciated by thoughtful men. He called to the heroes of the demons, O Viprachiti, O Namuchi, O Puloma, O Maya, Anarva, and Shambhara, please hear me and do not flee. Next verse has a purport. This is a good verse, actually. This one and the next one. Good verse from the chapter. We'll recite the Sanskrit. Oh, how many of you have little thingies? Okay, you can. Jatasya mrityu dhruva eva sarvata prati kriya yasya na cheha klipta loka yashashchata tuto yadihyamum. Ko nama mrityum navrinita yuktam. So Vichrasura said, all living entities who have taken birth in this material world must die. Jatashamritrum dhruva eva sarvata. So eva sarvata, sarvata, all the living entities in various bodies, and sarvata. Jatashram, they have taken birth. Mritu dhruva, certainly they will die. Definitely, it's inevitable, they will die. Pratikriya yasana chaya klipta, surely no one in this world has found any means to be saved from death. So pratikriya means counteracting. So everyone, all living entities who take birth in this world are sure to die. And so far, no one has discovered any means to counteract it. Understand? No one has found any means to counteract it. Only promises have come, but nothing, no fruit is actually manifested. Even providence has not provided a means to escape it. Under the circumstances, death being inevitable, if one can gain promotion to higher planetary systems and be always celebrated here by dying a suitable death, what man will not accept such a glorious death? Purport, if by dying one can be elevated to the higher planetary systems and be ever famous after his death. So two things, loka, yasha. Loka means higher planetary system, yasha means gaining fame. Understand? So if by dying one can be elevated to higher planetary systems and be ever famous after his death, who is so foolish that he will refuse such a glorious death? No, anyone so foolish? Probably all of us. Similar advice was also given by Krishna to Arjuna. Quote, my dear Arjuna, the Lord said, do not desist from fighting. If you gain victory in the fight, you will enjoy a kingdom. And if you die, you will be elevated to the heavenly planets. End quote. Everyone should be ready to die while performing glorious deeds. A glorious person is not meant to meet death like cats and dogs. Understand? So this verse is saying that out of all living entities who have taken material bodies, they are certain to die. Understand? Death means being separated from material body. Birth means coming in contact with a material body. Understand? Birth means accepting material body. Death means being separated from material body. So all those who have accepted bodies, they're sure to be separated from that body. They're sure to die. And pratikriya yasana chaya klipta. Klipta means devise. So far, no one has devised a means to counteract this. Pratikriya. Isn't it? No one has devised a means to counteract this. Therefore, since you have to die, might as well die gloriously. You understand? That's the message. Since you cannot escape death, then you might as well die gloriously. Die performing some glorious deed. Understand? Follow? Life is meant for dying gloriously. That's the message. Life is meant for dying gloriously. Human form of life provides an opportunity to die gloriously and not die like the cats and the dogs. That's what Prabhupada says here in the purport. How do the cats and dogs die? The cats and dogs die full of ignorance and fear. So many attachments being separated from them. They also attach, just like you're attached to tongue, belly, genitals. Isn't it? You attach to tongue, belly, genitals? Yes. All of us are as conditioned souls. So the animals also, they attach to their tongues, belly, and genitals too. And death means separation from that attachment to tongue, belly, and genitals. How can I live without this enjoyment of my tongue, belly, and genitals? And this is called death. The animals think in this way, actually. Animals think in this way. And human beings, we also think in this way. But we have fancier language to describe it. We call it love, you know, and you write love songs about them and so on. But it's just the same attachment to tongue, belly, genitals, isn't it? So you get separated from that attachment. That is called death. It is a very miserable thing, actually, when you're attached like that. So that's how cats and dogs die. And most human beings, they're called as Dvipada Pashu, two-legged animals. So they're also dying like this. Human form of life is not meant for dying like cats and dogs. It's meant for dying gloriously. Human form of life gives opportunity for dying gloriously. And someone shall think, oh, but I don't want to die. But that you cannot avoid. That's what Richard Sewer is saying here. If you have accepted the material body, you cannot avoid this. And now, oh, I'll find someone who has some medicine of immortality to avoid it. No, no one has devised means to get out of it. Therefore, you have to die. So since you have to die, you might as well die gloriously. Huh? Die performing glorious deeds. Human form of life meant for dying glorious death. We're living to die, actually. Understand? And then in death, we can live in the spiritual world, provided you've died properly. Understand? You have to die properly. It's like now they have so many seminars or workshops and programs, like the art of living, they call it, and various things. How to live in the material world like cat and dog, nicely. Isn't it? But now, where is the seminar for teaching us how to die? Since we have to die, it is unavoidable. And oftentimes you'll find that when people are dealing with death, they don't know how to process it. For example, when their loved ones die. And many, especially now in the secular world, where spirituality is considered for persons of weak minds and fools and so on. We're people of reason. We don't believe in God. But then when they are faced with death, they don't know how to process it, the death of their family members and so on. I remember last year at Northwestern, one girl, her mom was dying from brain cancer. And she came to our kirtan. She hadn't been for a while, but she came to our kirtan because she just needed some solace. And she didn't know how to process that her mom was dying. And her mom was her everything for her. So it was a very difficult time period. And she was mentioning how she didn't have any belief in anything spiritual and so on. And she was saying to me, she said, I really wish I had that right now because I don't know how to deal with this. And it was tearing up her whole world. And then it was dealing with that along with all the other pressures of her life, academic-wise, economic-wise, social pressures, all of that, plus now her mom was dying. And she didn't know how to process that. So where are the seminars to teach us how to die properly or how to deal with death? No seminar like that. That is Krishna consciousness movement is meant to teach us how to die gloriously. So then that glorious death is described as lokayasha. Glorious death means that death by which you can attain higher planetary systems. Of course, it can mean swargaloka. It can also mean a spiritual world, which is highest planetary system. You die glorious, and that glorious death is that by which you can attain higher planetary system and gain eternal fame by, of course, in the case of a devotee, by pleasing the Supreme Lord. In the next verse, it clarifies what this glorious death is. It doesn't have any purport. So it says here, translation, there are two ways to meet a glorious death, and both are very rare. Understand? First one is to die after performing mystic yoga, especially bhakti yoga, by which one can control the mind and living force, and die absorbed in thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's first type of rare death. Second type of rare death, the second is to die on the battlefield, leading the army and never showing one's back. These two kinds of death are recommended in the Shastra as glorious. So two ways to die gloriously. One way to die gloriously is to be absorbed in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Brahma Santaranaya. Brahma means the Supreme Lord. Either in his Brahman feature, Paramatma feature, and for devotees, his Bhagavan feature. There's one way to die gloriously. Die absorbed in prema, love of God. Understand? That's one glorious death. In fact, living only has meaning for getting prema. Otherwise, no meaning to living also for very long. Even the trees live for a long time, Bhagavatam says. Trees are living for 500 years, isn't it? You want to live like that? 500 years standing in one place, not doing anything. That is not very glorious. So living only has meaning for getting prema, for getting Brahma Sandaranaya, for becoming absorbed in the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, this life is useless. Understand? No use to living also. Actually, if you write a song like that, it could probably go platinum. There is no use to living life without love. They make songs like this now, and they make millions of dollars, isn't it? Yes. But there's truth. But real love is not destructible. In the material world, they say it is better to have love. How does the saying go? It is better to have love than lost, than to not have loved at all. You've heard this saying before? This is a dumb saying. This is a dumb saying. It is better to have loved and lost than to not have loved at all. But ask the people who've gone through that, they'll not agree. The torment you have to go through. Actually, when you have real love, there's no question of loss. You understand? Real love is prema. Real love is eternal. So once one attains it, it cannot be lost at any moment. You understand? It's not that I love you now and that I don't love you tomorrow. It's not like that. That is not love. That is lust. Lust has a nature of always changing. Understand? Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that which is sat has the nature of not changing, and that which is asat has the nature of always changing. Yes? So that which is asat has the nature of constantly changing. So if you say that you have love, but it changes into hate next day, then that means it was asat. That wasn't really love. Real love means the nature of sat platform, no change. So once you get prema, there is no question of losing it. Understand? You can't fall out of love with Krishna. Once you fall in love with Krishna, that's the point of no return. And you're gone, fellow. Gone case. Finished. Understand? That is the goal of life, to fall in love with Krishna. And that's the point of no return. It is not that you fall in love with Krishna and then one day you say, I don't know if I like Krishna or not. Not like that. That is lust. So there's a nice statement. I think it comes in the CC. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is quoting it here. Prema dhana vina vyarta daridra jivan dasukari veta more deha prema dhan. If you all had the verse, we could sing it. This is a really sweet verse. It says here, life without love is useless and poor, they say. Appoint me in thy service, O Lord, with love as my pay. Did you catch that? That's sweet. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta translated it like this. Life without prema, life without love, is useless and poor, they say. Daridra jivan means poor jivas. It's like the Mayavadis, they say we're poor Narayanas. They refer to everyone as Narayana. We are Narayana. They say Narayana Namaha. That's how they greet each other, Narayana Namaha. Narayana Namaha. At that lady at the yoga studio. Narayana Namaha. Narayana. That's how they greet each other, actually. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, we are not Daridra Narayana. They have this term, poor Narayana, Daridra Narayana. So they see that some bum is in the street. So they see the bum in the street, they say, that is also Narayana. They say, but that is Daridra Narayana. Daridra Narayana means poor Narayana. How can Narayana be poor? He's husband of the goddess of fortune. How can he be poor? But they refer to those persons as Daridra Narayana. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, we are not Daridra Narayana, we are Daridra Jivan, we're poor Jivas, not poor Narayanas, poor Jivas. Huh? Why are we a poor Jivas? Because we are without prema. Understand? Prema dhana vina vyarta Daridra Jivan. Huh? Life without love is useless and poor, they say. Jivana really means life. So you have a poor life, useless life, if you have no prema, no love. Understand? For life is useless. Understand? No prema. In fact, when Lord Chaitanya, after Krishna came to distribute Krishna consciousness, he felt himself unsuccessful because he hadn't given the prema of the Brijavasi very successfully, which was actually his objective when he appeared. Prema rasa niryasa karite aswadana rag marg bhakti loke karite pracharan. Krishna came for the purpose of tasting the prema rasa of the Brijavasis. Understand? Prema rasa niryasa karite aswadana. Aswadana means he wanted to taste or experience the love of the Brijavasis, prema rasa. Prema rasa means the prema of the Brijavasis. And rag marg bhakti loke karite pracharan. And then he wanted to, pracharan means to preach. He wanted to preach the path of rag marg to the people of this world so that they could attain that prema rasa of the Brijavasis. Understand? This purpose of Lord Chaitanya's movement. Understand? So then he felt himself very unsuccessful. So he began to introspect. Although he's omniscient, he also introspects. So Krishna began introspecting. And then he said that I've not given the love of the Brijavasis very effectively. I've not done a good job. And without this love, without this prema of the Brijavasis, then I consider this whole universe to be useless. He was saying like this. It comes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 3. He said, I consider this whole jagat to be useless without this prema. So the same here is this verse is saying, if you, one's life is useless and poor without prema bhakti, without love. Therefore, the devotee is praying to the Lord, appoint me in thy service, O Lord, with love as my pay. So living life only has the value when one is after real love. Otherwise, there's no value to life whatsoever. Practically no value, simply living like cats and dogs, dying like cats and dogs. And so we want to die, of course, having attained prema bhakti. One time, some man, we were on Harinam in New York, and a person was kind of heckling us a little bit, and he said that, are you all afraid of dying? Something to this, he asked a question like this, are you all afraid of dying? And so the devotee gave a nice philosophical answer how we are not afraid of dying because we're just serving Krishna now, and if we die, we'll serve Krishna also in the spiritual world. And therefore, we're not afraid of dying. So then I said, well, I'm afraid of dying. And then the man looked at me and said, why are you afraid of dying? Aren't you all the same group? Don't you think in the same way? And I said, because I don't have prema yet. So I want to live long enough to give myself an opportunity to at least come closer to my ideal. I don't have my ideal yet. But I want to live long enough to at least minimally gain greater momentum for coming closer to my ideal of getting prema bhakti. Otherwise, no point in living long time. But if you live long time for achieving that objective so you can really die gloriously, then it can be said to be worthwhile. Brahma Sundara Naya. This is the first way to die gloriously. The other way to die gloriously is on the battlefield. I don't know if that applies so much today. And the sort of things that are going on in Kali Yuga. So Richard Sura is making this point here that since anyway you have to die, you cannot avoid it, that you might as well die gloriously. You should die a glorious death. A glorious death means a life where you die with prema, or at least a life where your whole energy was dedicated to that pursuit. Who is that person who will not take such a glorious opportunity and would rather die like a cat and dog? Understand? The end of the chapter, by the way. Yeah. I have some other verses from the Bhagavatam which are really good, but I decided to skip over. If you attain the heavenly planets anytime, it would be a bad thing. For at least devotees, we think like that. Actually, in the heavenly regions, there is intense enjoyment. Understand? You enjoy very nicely. Sex life lasts for 6 months. A session. 6 months, a session. 6 months, they're having sex life. Understand? The intense enjoyment is there. So, of course, when they do sex life and drink intoxication and so on, there is no sinful reaction for that. That is your, you well deserved it for all your pious activities by which you could get such a birth. But problem with it is that they create some scars in the mind of intense sensual enjoyment. Naturally, if you enjoy intensely, it creates an imprint of intense sensual enjoyment. So at the time of exhausting your piety and coming back to the earth planet, those impressions of sense enjoyment remain, and they cause you to do sinful activity on the earth planet in an attempt to try to replicate the sensual experience gained in the heavenly regions. You understand? I was just reading about this like a week ago by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. So although to enjoy in the heavenly regions like that is not inherently sinful, they create impressions in the mind of sense enjoyment. So when you come back to the earth planet, in an attempt to replicate that experience, you end up performing sinful activities. And that way you go down and then go, and like this, this is the merry-go-round of conditioned life, samsara. So to attain the heavenly regions at any point really is inauspicious. In fact, to attain any position in the material world is inauspicious. Whether it be pious or impious, it is all inauspicious. If you become a criminal, that is inauspicious. If you become the CEO of a company, that is inauspicious. Understand? All of it is inauspicious. Everything in the material is inauspicious because it reinforces ignorance. Either, and there's the pious feature or forms of ignorance, and there's the impious forms of ignorance. The only thing that's auspicious is that which is contacting spiritual light. So even if you're situated in an impious situation, with contact with Christian consciousness or spiritual life, then all of a sudden that which is inauspicious can become auspicious by such contact. And without which, anything you're doing in the material is inauspicious. So for devotees, attaining the heavenly regions is always really inauspicious, as with the attainment of anything in this material world. And so in other Kali Yugas, and in this Kali Yuga as well, even where Lord Chaitanya appears, such an attainment will be inauspicious. In other Kali Yugas, Lord Chaitanya doesn't come, but the Yuga Dharma is still there, Hare Krishna. But the type of prema it can engender is in relationship to the realm of Vaikuntha. Only in the Kali Yuga where Lord Chaitanya appears does the Harinam Sankirtan movement provide the opportunity for attaining Braja Prema. So this Kali Yuga is pretty auspicious. And we have to also have the faith that if we're unsuccessful in this life, Krishna's not going to make an arrangement for us to take birth in the heavenly regions. If we were really after the real goal of life, that's what I'm saying. So to die gloriously means that either you die with prema, and provided that might not happen to many of us in this life, there is no loss. It is not that bhakti is a one-lifetime program. It can be. Srila Prabhupada says that you can go back home, back to Godhead in one life. But all that means is you can go back home to Godhead in one life. It doesn't mean you will go back home to Godhead in one life. You understand? That's all it means. So it is possible to go back home, back to God. But what do you need to be doing in order to get the goal of our life? So provided that for many of us, it may be a multi-life program in terms of achieving our highest ideal. But as long as you're set on that ideal, vyavasayamika buddhi ekaha kurunanana, right? As long as you're having faith, vyavasayamika buddhi, as Srila Prabhupada has described it, refers to the faith that by applying Krishna consciousness with this objective, it will manifest the results. I will achieve my ideal. The word ideal generally is a word that refers to things that are nice but unattainable. And like an ideal, for what would be a high ideal? That everyone in the world loves each other. That's called an ideal. Something that's nice, but it's probably unachievable. So similarly, a lot of the loftier goals of Christian consciousness, like prema, it's like a nice ideal. But for many, they may be thinking that it is unattainable. It is beyond contemporary feasibility. We'll not be able to get it. So we should just be satisfied with doing something connected to Krishna, and then we die. Certainly, by Srila Prabhupada's mercy, we'll be brought back to the spiritual world. That's okay. It's all right, but probably you're going to have to take a few more births. And there is no loss in that. Vyavasayatmika buddhi refers, as Prabhupada describes in that purport, it refers to the faith, the conviction, that by pursuing Krishna consciousness, I will embody my highest ideal sooner or later. That's called Vyavasayatmika Buddhi. So Eka, he remains resolute in his determination. So either we die with prema or we die with this resolute determination. And I don't care how long I have to wait to get it. Understand? Like Mukunda Dutt. Lord Chaitanya said, you won't see me for 10 million years. Mukunda Duster. He went into ecstasy. Now, if we had heard that, we would have been, all those rounds I chanted for nothing. We think like this in another way. Mukunda Dutt only thought one thing. Lord Chaitanya will see me. Never mind how long it's going to have to take. And in fact, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was describing Daryat. You know this from Nectar of Instruction. Utsaha Nishchayat. Daryat means patience, or means sober, patient. He says, a person, patience means that I'll get the goal of life, this life, or after 100 lifetimes. But in any way, I will not give up my determination to attain Krishna. He says, such a mentality is called patience. So even if I have to wait 10 million years to get it, I will get it. Vyavasayatmika Buddhi refers to that conviction that it will come. I will embody my highest ideal sooner or later. So we die with that Vyavasayatmika Buddhi, or we die having attained prema. Both such births are glorious, deaths, both types of death are glorious. And we have to have the faith that if we're dying with that Vyavasayatmika Buddhi, having yet to attain prema, then Krishna is not going to make me take birth in the heavenly regions. That's the reason I just discarded all these things. So whether it's this Kali Yuga or that Kali Yuga, someone's after prema, Krishna's not going to put him in the heavenly regions where he'll enjoy intensely, create heavy samskaras of enjoyment, come back down, do sinful life to try to replicate and so on. We should have the confidence that Krishna will make an arrangement, that we will contact the proper Sangha to continue our evolvement toward our highest ideal, like that. Okay, Justin and then right to you. Yeah. Yeah, the Asuras here, they've already captured Swargaloka, right? So in a very literal sense, we're fighting for Swargaloka. They're actually already captured, and the demigods are trying to get it back. So he's saying by fighting, and it's like a general principle for warriors as well, what we're hearing about Kshatriyas, that if you, there are two ways to die. You can die on the battlefield, and by such glorious death, you can attain Swargaloka. Now, in the case of the demons here, will they attain Swargaloka? Probably not. There are a lot of factors that go, but going to perhaps their particular situation, their particular karmic situation. But as a general principle for warriors, they don't run away from the battlefield. That's the point that's being made here. Prabhupada's quoting Krishna speaking to Arjuna in chapter 2, that happy are the Kshatriyas where such a fighting opportunity comes, even without looking for it. Why are they happy? Because it either allows them to attain the kingdom, the earth kingdom, along with all the opulences and fame, or else they'll attain Swargaloka. So Kshatriyas will not abandon such an opportunity. And it's also a dharmic, or against the principles of dharma, for Kshatriyas to run away from the battlefield. So to die in such a way is certainly glorious. We're hearing Vijayasura speak about that. It seems like more like a principle. He's a great-minded person, so great-minded persons generally tend to speak in principles, and not be concerned with all the excessive details of particular individual karmic situations. So as a general principle, this is what is understood. Now, will the demons actually get from? Probably not. Maybe they've done a lot of demonic things. But as a general principle, this is the point. Right. Yes, great-minded persons generally speak in principles. Therefore, if you don't catch the principle, and you were looking for details, then you'll get confused. It'll say some principle understanding that we have to capture. Yeah. Is there a spiritual sense enjoyment for the jiva in the spiritual world? Yes. And Prabhupada actually says such, he even uses that language, spiritual sense gratification. In the first canto Bhagavatam, I actually don't remember because I haven't. It's the first canto Bhagavatam. I think it's chapter 10. I'll have to look it up. But yeah, Krishna, Prabhupada says that we are after spiritual sense gratification. Oh, maybe I can just look in Veda base here. There is spiritual, but we have to understand that the. What is the enjoyment of the jivas in the spiritual world? It is not like the enjoyment of the conditioned souls. The two are not the same. In the spiritual world, their sense of identity with Krishna is complete. Understand? So although they are individual souls, their identification with Krishna is such that their own, Krishna's only desire is to satisfy his senses in one sense. That is called prema, in fact. And prema means a desire to satisfy Krishna's senses. So in other words, their identity with Krishna has become so complete that they cannot think outside of the happiness of Krishna. In the material world, we're able to easily think outside of the happiness of Krishna. Why are we able to easily think outside of the happiness of Krishna? What's the answer? What's the answer? We're selfish. Yes. I said in the material world, we're able to easily think outside of the pleasure of Krishna, out of the happiness of Krishna. How is that possible? We've forgotten him. We think we're Lord. Yes, anything else? Cannot enjoy and control. Yeah. All these answers are correct. We think that we're separate from Krishna. This is called Maya. But because of the sense of being separate from Krishna, we have separate interests. You follow? But in the spiritual world, they identify with Krishna in love. Bhakti is an energy that forces one to identify himself wholly with the beloved without losing his individuality. So it's a little bit hard to understand. Right, so you think, and only, in other words, you're able to think only in terms of the beloved, in this case, Krishna. So there's happiness of the senses in the spiritual world, but is the happiness derived from seeing Krishna as happy, in simple language? And if my distress is the cause of Krishna's happiness, then that distress is my happiness. They think in this way. This is described by Srimati Radharani herself in the verse Asli Shava. Huh? Yes, the stress that comes in serving Krishna, using your words, is the ecstasy of the devotee on that platform. And therefore we want to come to that platform. That's real Krishna consciousness. That if it shall bring Krishna happiness to see me distressed, then I'm willing to accept distress for the rest of my life. Just like the story we hear of the gopis being willing to go to hell for eternity to remove Krishna's headache for a moment, which is quite a horrific story for a conditioned soul. I wouldn't do that. I'll suffer in hell, and Krishna will be okay. You know, he's God. But for the gopis, their identification with Krishna's suffering, his distress in the form of a headache, was so intense. When they're in hell, they're in ecstasy, yes. Knowing that if Krishna wants me to be in hell, then this being in hell is the source of my greatest happiness. Such is the consciousness of such a resident of the spiritual world. We can hardly fathom such a consciousness. Any other question?
There is only prema in Sanskrit for love of Godhead. Yeah, so there is no love in the material world in sense of love between man and woman and all these things.
Or mother and son. Or friend and friend.
Yeah.
None of it is real.
They're illusion, huh?
All of it. That's disheartening, isn't it? Huh? That is also false. It's an illusion. I'll just let that simmer for a second. Let it simmer in the heart and dishearten everyone for a second. Nah. What about love? We have to understand, what does love mean? See, the thing is, with words like love, people speak them without defining what it is. So unless you give a clear definition of what it is, you cannot understand what people are actually talking about when they use the word love. Nor can you distinguish it from other things which aren't love, right? So therefore, when you're speaking, you have to define all your terms so that people know exactly what you're talking about and can also be able to distinguish between what you're actually talking about and what you're not talking about. So in the material world, people just assume they understand what love is. And if you were asked them to define it, I'm sure you would get a plethora of definitions. I should use the word menagerie, actually. A menagerie, because menagerie is like putting wild animals together in one place. You'll get a menagerie of understandings of what love is. And therefore, we have to understand, how do we define love in Christian consciousness? So in short, Kaviraj Goswami defines love as a desire to satisfy the senses of Krishna. That is called love. And the desire to satisfy one's own senses, including the mind, the mental state, based on a false egoistic conception of self, that is called as kama, or material lust, often misnamed as love in the material world. So in the case of like a conjugal lover or friends or parental relationships and so on, those relationships are based on false egoistic conceptions of self. That's why it can be love intrinsically. For example, a mother loves her child. She loves her child more than she loves any other children. Why is that? Because she has a false egoistic conception of herself that extends to that entity, which she calls her child. So then, according to how sometimes people's egoistic conceptions extend to include their nation, sometimes they extend to include animals and insects and so on. Sometimes they may even extend to include, you know, the globe to whatever extent that it can. So that means, but all such conceptions are false notions of themselves. So naturally, if the foundation for their love is a false notion, their love must also be false. You follow? If the foundation is a false foundation, then anything built upon it is also of the same nature, flimsy and false, temporary. So of course, this doesn't mean that there isn't, genuine affection from such persons, but that's generally referred to as a rope of affection. It's not spoken of in a very positive way in the Bhagavatam. It's called as a sneha pasha. Sneha means a rope of affection. It means it refers to a rope that binds you to the material world. So the affection one has for friends, family members, society, friendship, and love, the Bhagavatam speaks of it as a rope that binds you to the material existence, which is not a very positive glorification of the affection or love in the material world. So how can we transform those relationships based on false notions to something conducive for growth in Krishna consciousness? We start to see those entities in relationship to Krishna. And so Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his Sharanagati prayers, he helps us to kind of understand how we might do so. He says that he maintains his wife and children because they are the servants of Krishna. And therefore, being the servants of Krishna, for him to attempt to maintain them by whatever means necessary is pleasing to Krishna. He says that my home is not different from Goloka Vrindavan and the temple of the Lord, and therefore I maintain it. Otherwise, I would not maintain it. But because this is the place of the Lord, therefore I am maintaining it. And I'm simply a dog, you know, like a dog in the front of the door of the Lord's house. In this way, it's a reconceptualization of these entities in relationship to Krishna. And that way we can say that there is a genuine exchange of love between those entities because it's in relationship to Krishna. At least that's how we define love in the Krishna consciousness movement. Yeah, the love. Sure. I mean, I'm not going to say it wasn't. Of course it was genuine. Yeah, so that's, like I said, if it's in relationship to Krishna, then to that degree we can say it was love. Like I said, if it's in relationship to Krishna, it can be called love. But even in those relationships, like in the Bhagavatam, Queen Kunti is a pure devotee of Krishna. And all of her children are also pure devotees of Krishna. But she's praying to Krishna, please break my attachment to the Vrishnis and the Pandavas. But they're all pure devotees. Aren't you supposed to be attached to pure devotees? Isn't that like a good thing? And the answer is yes, it is a good thing to be attached to devotees. But she's saying that I have some material aspects to my relationship with these persons. And so, my dear Lord, can you please remove those material portions so that it can be really based fully and solely only on you? And so in the same way, we would like our relationships to be accordingly, you know. And a lot of our relationships as devotees, Krishna is the center. But there are also, there may be, at least in the case of some of us, other elements at play that don't really have much to do with Krishna. So then we may pray to the Supreme Lord in a similar way like Queen Kunti. Please, Lord, remove those material portions, the kind of mundane attachment that is coming up sometimes in these other things. Remove those portions so that it can really be based solely and wholly on you. And our exchange with one another is really about you. And that's kind of how we define love in the Krishna consciousness movement. Like that. So to the degree it's focused on Krishna, we call it love. Otherwise, ain't no love in this material world. I don't have my guitar. I wrote a single called Ain't No Love in the Material World. I wrote it for Justin because he was really attached to this idea. So I decided to write a single for him called Ain't No Love in This Material World. Not from the mother, not from the friend, not from the conjugal lover. Amen. It is disheartening. I remember when the first book I read was The Science of Self-Realization. And my whole quest for spiritual life, as I've often mentioned, was I was wanting to fall in love also. Being an illusion, not knowing what that all meant. But I was wanting that. When I read SSR, Srila Prabhupada was writing in there in a response to a letter written to him by Alin Lutwick. That he said, in her letter, she kept saying, love is and let love be. Like this very kind of new agey. And Prabhupada responds to her, and you should know that there is no love in this material world. And then he just goes on to describe why there is any. And I remember when I read that, it was in the middle of the night when I was reading that. And my whole quest for spiritual life was for love, you know. So I'm reading this, and Prabhupada said, there is no love in this material world. And I was like, I knew it. Because I was kind of getting a hunch right before I read SSR. I remember asking my mother 3 weeks before I read the SSR, would I ever fall in love? I remember asking my mother that at the Dominic's, that's now a Joel Osco here. They used to have a Starbucks in there. And I remember sitting there at the Starbucks with my mother. She bought a coffee. And I had to ask her if I would ever fall in love there. And she was like, yes, everyone falls in love. And as she was describing it, I was like, this sounds like a bunch of crap. I remember thinking that, you know, and then the hunch was coming to me, maybe there isn't any love in the material world. And I was getting, of course, it's a depressing feeling to go with, you know, because that's what life is actually meant for, materially speaking and spiritually speaking, in a lot of ways. And then I read that in Prabhupada's SSR as kind of a reaffirmation or reconfirmation of that, and I was just like, wow, okay, that's a little disheartening. And then let me see the whole picture doesn't say there's no love. But there is no love unless it has its relationship with Krishna. Otherwise, whatever we call love is just a misnomer. So, you know, the canvas is a little bit bigger than that statement. There is love, but it has to share its relationship to the Supreme Lord. And because at the present moment as conditioned souls, we don't understand what a relationship with the Supreme Lord actually entails. We have no bhava in terms of one of the four rasas. And so our relationship right now is rather, it's more of a conjecture than it is an experience. Our relationship with Krishna at the present moment is a religious orientation, not an experiential one, right? You experience your relationship with Krishna and one of the four rasas. Anyone here is experiencing that? Anyone? No. So our relationship with Krishna at the present moment, which is a good start, is a religious orientation, and one that is perhaps without much experience of the transcendental platform. And therefore, when we hear love can only be in relationship to Krishna, it feels a little uncomfortable for us. Because we're like, our relationship with Krishna right now entails only the religious orientation and not the experiential one. And so the religious orientation is one that's a little bit dry sometimes, or a little bit austere, not always very joyful. How many of you have that experience? A show of hands, you know. How many of you experience a religious orientation? That means our sadhana as a great form of bliss on a daily basis. You like cartwheeling down the stairs to come to Mangalarti. You know, literally every step is a dance, every word is a song. How many of us experience that in our religious orientation of our relationship with Krishna? Probably not many of us. And in the course of our services, especially the daily basis thing, every single day, going every day, how many of you sometimes get irritated? You know, you just want a break. Show of hands, I need a break. Need a break, yes. So this is a religious orientation of our relationship with Krishna. And therefore, when we hear that love can only be in relationship to Krishna, the mind takes it as becomes disheartened by that notion. Because right now, the mind's relationship with Krishna is only a religious one and not an experiential one. And therefore, when you say a statement like this, there is no love in the material world unless it's in relationship to Krishna, the mind responds in an antagonistic way. It doesn't appreciate that statement. And therefore, you'll find that most of the conditioned souls will try to justify how, no, there is love. They try to find some way to adjust the idea. But if we actually have the experience of a relationship with Krishna, then we would say, that's the truth. There ain't no love unless it's got a relationship with Krishna. Then you would really understand the depth of what is being said there. And it's not a disheartening thing. It's an encouragement for us to get love of Godhead. Sometimes we take it in the opposite way. It is not a discouragement to say it's no love. It's actually an encouragement to come to the spiritual platform where you can actually experience what it actually is. How devotees love other living entities because of their love for Krishna. So to say that there's no love on the material platform is actually an encouragement to come into the spiritual world. Just as when I say there is no gold in the brahmachari ashram, right? That's an encouragement to go to a place where there is gold, right? Suppose you're looking for gold in the brahmachari ashram. Then you'll be successful? No, you'll not be successful, most likely. You'll not be successful. So if I say that there is no gold in the brahmachari ashram, that is not a discouragement. First of all, there's relief. Okay, there is gold, but it's not to be found in this place. You follow? It's to be found somewhere else. So similarly, to say that there is no love in the material world means it cannot be found on this platform. You have to bring your consciousness to another platform where it is available. So to say that there is no love is actually an encouragement to come to the real platform where love can be experienced and exchanged with other entities, beginning with Krishna. So I know the mind does take it a little bit. It just gets, goes, what? Shield, block that. He don't know what he's talking about, you know. I experienced love so many times in the material world. Like that. Mind takes it in a negative way, but actually it's a positive statement. It's an encouragement to come into spiritual platform. Okay, any final thing? Yeah, sorry, you turned that. Yeah.
About this, should we be attached or not attached to the devotees? There was one story with the Pandavas who are walking to some. I just heard once this story. I'm not sure if you know it. They were walking to some mountain, and Maharaj Yudhishthira left alone at one time because the others left behind.
Okay.
Do you know this story?
I don't. So.
Anyway, the point was that Maharaj Yudhishthira was not attached to his brothers, and he continued to the to his path to the spiritual world, I think. Okay. Something like this.
Also, maybe the 15th chapter of the Bhagavatam.
First canto?
Yeah, first canto. Where the Pandavas retire from the
material. Yeah, exactly. Okay. So the question is, should we be attached to the devotees, or we should be detached and try to save ourselves? Or, I mean, you know.
What do you mean by save ourselves?
I mean, should we be alone and going alone to our path, or we should be like a group devotees or something?
In the stage of practice, you better be in a group. Otherwise, Maya is going to shoot you down like a sniper. And I always say that Maya was the first person to come up with the notion of divide and conquer. And then later on, I think, who was noted for saying that? Caesar? Caesar gets credit for that, but Maya was the first person, the original person to come up with that idea, divide and conquer. First, make the devotees mad at each other, so they isolate themselves from one another, and then just shoot them down one by one, make an easy target. So definitely, when we say attachment to devotees is important for our progress, so we have to be attached to devotees. Yeah, that should be there. Now, there are many verses from the Bhagavatam glorifying the attachment to devotees. And it's not that when the Pandavas, for example, are retiring for the spiritual world that they are detached in the sense of like callous toward the devotees at that point. They are still attached. But then their actions are manifesting for particular purposes, perhaps for setting an example for how one should leave this world, etc., for various reasons. But we see in Gaur-lila, which is really the... Gaur-lila is more important for us in a lot of ways than the examples of the Bhagavatam. Not only because of proximity to us in terms of time, but also in terms of Krishna coming in the Kali Yuga to show us, Kali Yuga creatures, how to be devotees. So we derive a lot of our understanding of devotional interactions from Gaur-lila, from Lord Chaitanya's lila, in a lot of ways more than we do from the Bhagavatam, which has a different social context, oftentimes a different yuga context and so on. So in Gaur-lila, we see how they deal with their attachments to each other, like when Haridasa Thakur was leaving his body. It's not like he just decided to be isolated from everyone, isn't it? He wanted to be with Lord Chaitanya and the rest of the Vaishnavas. They came in and performed a very nice program for him, like that. So attachment to the devotees is always a good thing. Like I was saying in terms of Queen Kunti's prayer, we should pray that the material functions of the attachment be removed. Because we're usually attached to the devotees for material reasons. They make us laugh, they make us feel good. And like that, we may have some material elements to our attachment. So we want those elements to be removed so that the pure attachment can manifest to those with those devotees. Like that, it's probably a bigger discussion than I'm able to entertain at the present moment. But I hope that's just satisfied for now. Thank you very much for tolerating me. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. My encouraging class.